accession number 19588, real one.
Morris Leslie, real one. Where were you born, please?
Kirky, India.
Which year was this?
1923.
Can you tell me again how you came to be born in India, please?
My father was a regular soldier and he was stationed in India.
Which unit did he serve with?
He was with the Field Artillery, Royal Horse Artillery in the First World War.
And what rank did he eventually rise to?
Either a major or lieutenant colonel. I don't know which.
And did you have your schooling in India or in England?
England, mainly. But then I also had schooling in Singapore, where I was with him twice. Ireland, and mainly in England.
Whereabouts mainly were you at school in England?
Christ College, Blackheath, London, and Newcastle High Street in Newcastle under Lyme. And that's where I went and joined the army from, was Newcastle.
So when war was declared, you were only 16 years old.
That's right.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I was in London, yes.
Under what circumstances did you hear it?
Well, we just heard it on the wireless, that was it.
Were you living in Blackheath?
We were living in Charlton at the particular time, Charlton, which is adjacent to Blackheath.
What was your reaction to the news? How did you feel about the news?
Well, a bit mixed, because we knew it was due, it was going to be due before long. And this sort of Hitler sort of... Well, unless he sort of gave in, or virtually, he gave us some concessions, which he wasn't going to do. So once we heard it, then that was it.
And were you in any bombing of London or England by the German Air Force?
No, we got evacuated before the bombing started.
Where were you evacuated to?
My father was evacuated down to Lydd with the rest of the regiment, and I went down with him. And then from there on, was the school, which I was was evacuated down to Cornwall.
And how did your evacuation go? Was it a success?
Yes, I spent a year and a half down in Cornwall.
How did you get on with... Were you with a host family or with your own family?
No, we were with... well, the school was... The headmaster, actually, the brother had a huge house on the coast, and it was empty, so he took the whole school down. Well, about 80 or 90 school people went down there, including the senior members, and we were all evacuated down there.
So it was like a boarding school?
Well, we boarded in the school, that's right.
Whereabouts in Cornwall was this?
It was near a village called St. Berrien, which is just the other side of Penzance.
St. what?
St. Berrien.
Were you happy during the evacuation?
Yes, because we had various... obviously, the school had its own land. So we used to do school in the morning. A lot of us joined the Home Guard. We were members of the Home Guard, so we joined the Home Guard down there, and the headmaster was in charge of the Home Guard for that area.
What was the name of the school?
Christ College.
Christ College Blackheath, you said?
That's right, yeah.
So, was your schooling at all affected by the war and the disruption?
Well, it was a certain amount, because obviously a lot of the teachers never went down with us. The headmaster went down, another teacher went down... And then we had a French teacher who used to come in from across the other part of Cornwall, which is Senon Cove. But it was affected in a certain degree, because we only used to have school in a certain part of the day, and then the rest of the day was off. Then we used to do homework at night. The housing was lit by an acetylene sort of system, which we used to do ourselves. The bathing facilities were just hip baths, and we used to have to pump the water up into the tank ourselves. That's all the senior members. It was all sort of, rough and ready. We also had a matron moved down with us, and we also had a cook came down with us as well. But it was the nearest village was St. Barham, which is 4 miles away, and the nearest house was about a mile and a half.
And did any bombs fall in West Farn?
No, we saw some planes. I mean, they used to bomb coming across quite often from the bomb in Bristol. They used to fly across.
Which Home Guard unit did you join?
It was St. Barham Home Guard.
What was that like?
Well, it was a lot of farmers. We were the youngest, obviously. We were just, some of us were 16, some 17. There was about three of us senior members of the Home Guard. And we used to go out drilling. And we used to go out guarding the cliffs every night. And then, particular day, all we used to have the LDV up. We used to have old shotguns, you name it, all sorts of rifles. Eventually, we did get Lee Ross, the Canadian rifle, which we used to store in the school.
Did you think the Germans would invade at that time?
Well, we were called out one night with a heavy raid on London. We were called out on patrol, and we went out on the cliffs on patrol with, well, of course, we had the rifles there. And that was the only night we were actually called out, because they thought there was an invasion imminent. And that was in the heavy bombing, about September, I think it was, wasn't it? In London.
How much soldierly training did you get with the Home Guard?
We used to get roughly about, we used to meet about two or three times a week. And we just used to have marching, that was all regular. We used to, and then we took over shooting of guns. We used to, there was a farm next door, so we used to make that the shooting range. There wasn't an awful lot went on there, because most of them were farmers. And most of us carried the 12 bore. It wasn't until I got up into Stoke-on-Trent that I really became a member of the Home Guard when I was at school there, because we had then all the uniform. In them days down in Cornwall, we used to have the LDV, and we hadn't got the uniforms properly yet.
So you moved from Cornwall to Stoke-on-Trent?
Yes, my father was there again. They went down to Lynn, and they started getting bombed heavily, and shelled. So they then moved up into Prestatyn in North Wales. And that's where his headquarters was. And then he used to have to visit Stoke-on-Trent and one or two other places. And then eventually he moved across to Stoke-on-Trent from Prestatyn. And that's where I went to school again. And I left the school in Cornwall. I decided enough was enough, it was, the education was suffering a certain amount. And it was a long journey to get all up to Prestatyn. It was over, nearly 20 odd hours to get up there. It was a queer way of going up and then cutting back across. So I decided, and he was in agreement, so I went to Newcastle High School.
So you were in the Home Guard at Newcastle under Lyme?
That's right, yes, yeah.
And you say that Home Guard was a bit different.
Well, it was more, we had the proper uniforms, and we used to have to meet once a week down at the drill hall, the nearby drill hall, and from there we were allocated duties like guarding munition factories all about, which we used to do a turnabout. And then I used to return from the school, and the school calmly allowed us to come in late for lessons in the morning, so instead of coming in at, say, 9 o'clock, we used to come in about 10:30 if we were on guard duty that night.
So when did you actually join the army?
I joined the army when I was about just over 18. I'd already sit my matric, passed my matric, and I could have got exemption. I decided there and then I had a word with my father, and I said, well, it's getting near time, I don't want exemption, so I said I volunteered for the army, and the only thing he turned around to me said, if you volunteer with the army, you don't go in the infantry. That's what he said to me. So I joined the tanks. I went down to Bovington.
Do you know what date this was about?
It must be about April.
42.
I was 18 and a half. Let me see, 41? 42, beginning in 42, I was about.
What happened to you at Bovington?
Well, there we went into separate units. What they call troops. And there we were trained for 6 months. On drills, we had various drills, obviously. They were driven tanks, gunnery, everything to do with tanks. Driving, out on manoeuvres and all this.
What did you think of the quality of the instruction that you got?
Oh, it's good, but I mean, obviously it was from regular soldiers, and you know what regular soldiers are like, some of them. They get a bit carried away, oh, well, deaf and blind, you're right, it's a fair comment. But, I mean, there were some good sergeants there, because they'd been across to France. They'd obviously had some experience of warfare.
You mean they'd swear at you if you did something wrong?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, Tutu is the same nowadays, isn't it? They're from blind, they're not fast calling you a B, are they? Which, to me, is all wrong. But, I mean, that's only my opinion. You can have discipline without resorting to that sort of thing. But we learned. The spit and polish was there, as usual.
Was there very much bull?
Oh, there's a lot of ball, yes, yes. I mean, you just spend hours polishing toe caps and all this rigmarole, and yet as soon as you left the regiment, you were told to put dubbing on them, and that was the end of it. And you were polishing brasses up and this and that, you know. Oh, yeah. The ball was there, let's be honest.
Do you think there was any point to it, any usefulness to it?
Well, they meant there was a certain amount of use to it. It was the fact that you learn discipline, but to me, I presume it tends to make you tidy, but being as you've already been at a boarding house or a boarding school, you learn to be tidy at a boarding school, otherwise you get you're for the high jump. But I mean, it does tend to make you look after yourself and tidily. And I mean, they used to make you had to shave at 5:30 in the morning. You were down at 5:30 and were in breakfast at 6:30, and that was every morning. Irrespective of whether you were on guard duty or not. But it learnt you discipline, but to me it's not a thing I'd resort to myself. I mean, they're trying to counteract it now in the modern day sort of thing by cutting out all this. I mean, there was an episode, I don't know if you watched on television the other day, about the army.
No.
Now, there was one sergeant from the light infantry, as opposed to the guards. Now, the guards all used to F and blind. I don't know why, but he had the right approach. He used to take them aside, lecture them. They learnt just as well. But they still had to do the nice layout of kits and all the rest of it and all this. But there used to be a lot, in them days, there used to be a lot of pinching of kits. You know, if you lost a bit of kit, somebody come along before. If you didn't keep your eye on the kit, he'd pinch your bit. So you got the high jump. Oh, there's an awful lot that used to go on that, but we came through it all right.
Was there anything you asked to do that you found a problem?
No, not really. I mean, we had the worst thing I always thought we used to have was latrine. We used to have to clean out the latrines. And the other thing is we had cookhouse duties. Well, you know what they are, huge, great bands clean out in fat and that, but I mean, that was part and parcel of the, I mean, every night we used to just go across the canteen. We were on 7 and 6 a week. That's all we got. And 5 shillings of that was saved. So we were only on 2 and 6. So we used to go across the canteen and try and get the biggest cakes we could for the least amount of money. And midday was a meal. We used to have bread and dripping. That was a regular. We learnt, let's be honest, to live it hard.
What facilities did you have for cleaning the lavatories out?
well, it was mainly creosote and God knows what like that.
Creosote?
Oh, yeah. They used to put creosote in water, didn't they? Potato. I don't know if you had creosote. It was creosol. They used to call it creosol. And it used to come up in brownie colour. That's what they used to put in the toilets as well.
In the lavatory pan?
In the lavatory pans under there, some of them.
What was the idea of putting creosote in?
Well, they got this from abroad, didn't they? I don't know if you were in India and that, and Singapore, though. Of course, they used to have these wallers used to come round and they used to take them away, didn't they? And they, in went the creosote in the bottom. It's a disinfectant, strong disinfectant, that's all right. And that's what they used to clean the toilets out with.
But you had flush toilets?
Oh, yeah, most of them were flush toilets. There was the odd one out and outside.
And you said this lasted 6 months?
Pardon?
How long did this last at Bovington?
6 months. And then we passed out, qualified.
What were you qualified as?
We weren't qualified. We just qualified as tank. And then we went across from our various regiments. And from there, they ascertained from all our reports had come through as to what we were going to be best for. So they used to send us away on courses, like a gunnery course. Or a mechanics course to become a gunner mechanic, or a mechanic for a driver, or a gunner operator. That was the three things you could be, or a crew commanding.
Oh, what did you go in for?
I went in for gunner mechanic.
And what was your next step then?
Pardon?
What was your next step?
I suppose I could have gone up with crew commanding, but I actually put in for a. When we were up in Scotland, I actually put in for a commission. But I wasn't allowed to go. The colonel said I was too valuable a member. So he said, when you get across the other side, I shall recommend you to go in for. And I thought, well, by that time I might not be existing. So I left it.
So you'd move from Bovington to Scotland?
No, what we moved from Bobbing. I went to the 15th, 19th King's Royal Hussars. They were stationed in Newcastle. I spent a fortnight there and then decided that I would rejoin some of the old comrades who were stationed at Bingley, which is East Riding Yeomanry, which was stationed at Bingley.
So you asked for a transfer from the 15th, 19th to the Yeomanry?
To the Yeomanry, because a few of our friends from Bobbington had gone there.
Was there much difference between the King's Royal Hussars and the Yeomanry?
No, one was a regular mob, but not really. I mean, regular mobs during the war are the same as the Yeomanry mobs.
And how long had you been with the 15th, 19th?
2 months, 2 or 3 months. All I've been doing is driving trucks around. I didn't think that was quite what I wanted to be, so.
What did you want?
Well, I wanted to get in tank crews, that's what I was after.
And did you get into a tank crew with the Yeomanry?
Yeah.
What equipment did they have at that time?
At that time, we had Covenanters and Crusaders, light tanks, which are about 18 tons. They were fast, they used a lot of them in the desert. But unfortunately, they were unreliable.
In what way?
Well, they were what they call air pressured steering, and the air pressure used to keep going. So of course we had quite a few crashes going around the main streets. You know, you put a lock on, the air pressure would fail, and the lock wouldn't take. So the tank used to go straight on. It was a bad sort of system of steering.
But that would only happen if you put a lock on.
Yeah, that's if you want to steer. You steered by these two handles, which were air operated.
Any other problems with them?
Well, they were only light tanks. They were good. They were good tank, but they're only armed with 2 pounders, 37 millimeters. That's all. But that's what we done in most of our training up in Bingley and that. And then we moved down to, we then went down to in Suffolk. We moved down to Suffolk from there.
This must have been 43 then, was
Yes, 43, 44. And we took over, we had Valentine's. We gave up our, we moved into Valentine's.
What were they like?
Well, they were a little small tank. They were a heavier tank, more like an infantry tank. And then we learnt at Thetford, a place called Thetford. We learnt our DD, what they call DD tanks, amphibious tanks. And what they used to do is they used to have a screen, a camera screen, which was raised by injecting air into some pillars on the side. So it raised it up above the tank, and then you used to have straps to hold them in place, and then you used to go in the water. That's our first inclination of DD training.
So, which stretch of water were you practicing on?
Where it was at Thetford, a place called Thetford, a big lake. There was a big lake at Thetford. Our first casualties were there. One tank went down. They forgot to when you put the air pressure up, which raises the camera, you're supposed to put the straps in place so as to hold it up, and they forgot, so we lost I think it was three members in that, and the first casualties we lost there.
How were the struts put out mechanically?
Yes, you just pushed them in place. In other words, there used to be a bend like that. We used to straighten them like that and put a clamp across, which held them rigid. And that was the originator of the big Sherman DDs. And we then went on to Sherman DD tanks, you know, with the duplex drive, as they call, with twin propellers on the back.
So these first DD tanks were Valentine's, were they?
Valentine's we were on, yeah, that's right. And we used to do that night training as well. And a lot of us done Davis apparatus. They
Where did
used
you do that?
at Thetford, what they do, they used to sit you in a tank, an old tank, in the bottom of a huge sort of concrete well, and pour water in on top while you had the Davis up, and then you were given the pull. They pulled a certain string which you had attached to you, and you used to have to escape from the tank and come up. And that's our first inclinations of day, which was the submarine's way of getting out, and we all went through that as well.
How frightening was that?
Well, it was frightening. I mean, when you're sat in a tank and all cold water's coming on, and it's quite frightening.
But you coped with it?
We coped with it, yes. Well, we had to. And then from that, we were all told we had to learn to swim. So, being a good swimmer myself, I was sort of one of the coaches. So we used to have to go to Ipswich swimming pool, bath, and everybody had to learn to swim.
Could you not swim before this?
Oh yes, I was. I got my colours at Newcastle High School and all that. I got my certificates in London, first and second class swimming. But we had to learn everybody else to swim, so we were sort of succumbed as coaches.
What rank did you have by now?
I was only a trooper.
Well, which troop were you in,
One
or
troop,
squadron?
C squadron.
C Squadron, One Troop.
That's right, yeah.
Do you remember the leadership in those units?
Yes, it was a Lieutenant Howard, who came as he came from Oxford, I think. He came straight from Oxford to our. He was in charge of ours. We had a sergeant. We had two sergeants. Sergeant Jubb. There was two corporals. Two full corporals. And that was the leadership. I think it was one lance corporal. That was it.
What did you think of the quality of the leadership in the units?
Well, you couldn't really fault them. I mean, nobody knew much about them in actual fact. I mean, the trouble is they'd come straight from Octu, so you didn't know what they were going to be like in action. I mean, they'd be taught at Octu to lead, right? That's fair enough, they led. But regardless of what they were like in action, I mean, we didn't know.
And you were, at that time, a gunner mechanic?
I was a gunner mechanic, yeah. In other words, I was a gunner first and foremost, and if anything went wrong, I was a driver. So my first name was a troop leader as gunner.
And as a mechanic, would you know how to repair the engine of the tank?
Yeah, that's what we had to do. Yeah, as well as drive. We had to learn the mechanics.
And as well as the repairs on the gun?
Yeah, the gun was our full-time occupation. Yeah, we had to do all that bleeding, clean. And anything went wrong, we had to put it right.
What kind of gun did you have?
We had a 75mm on the Sherman. And one tank had a 17-pounder on, what we called a Firefly, which was a converted Sherman.
Any jobs that you particularly disliked or liked?
No, I didn't like cookhouse fatigue, I must admit.
But as a gunner mechanic, I mean?
Oh, no.
And would you just have one particular tank allocated to you?
Yes. We're always on one tank. Our tanks all, we all had names for our tanks. There was Kate, Karen, Keller. They were all K's. I was in Karen. And that was the troop leader's tank.
Why were they all K's?
I don't know. It was just some phobia, I suppose, they thought of. And from there, we'd done most of our training around that area. And then we went down to Wales, Pembroke, for our firing. We had a big firing 3 weeks down at Pembroke.
What did that involve?
Well, that involved tank shooting, mainly tank, because we couldn't fire around our area. There was nothing to fire. We had no range or anything around our area at all. So we had to go down to Pembroke Dock.
What was the technique that you were advised to adopt in using a tank gun?
Well, we had, of course we had the telescopic sights with various range on there, and we had in the tank itself, there was two pedals. One was for the main gun, which was on the floor, and one was for the coaxial machine gun. You had a power turret, which you pressed, which revolved the turret, and used to do all your action with your feet. And you used to have a thingy on the side, up and down, which is, so you have a traverse, power traverse, and the other thing which used to raise the gun up and down. You also had what they call a stabilizer on the gun, which wasn't of much use, I must be honest with it. Which was supposedly when you were on the move to bring the gun down to the level you wanted it. But the trouble is it was so slow in coming down while you were firing that it wasn't of much use. Nowadays, of course, they've got a more modern conception of it, which locks on the target and doesn't deviate. Whereas in them days, you can just imagine the thing was going up and down, you were trying to fire it. You just had to wait till it come down the target and go for it.
Any incidents that happened to you whilst you were in Pembrokeshire?
No, not particularly, no. We all fired on apart from the firing the 17-pounder, that was terrible. I mean, you fired the 17-pounder and all you could see, without being rude, all you could see was one terrific great flash out the gun.